This morning. My name is Jamie Heilman. I've been attending for 2.5 years and I've been a member here for 2. Everyone is invited to stay following this worship service for fellowship, conversation, and refreshments in our fellowship hall, the Kate Worker Room, just through these doors behind me. If you are a newcomer here this morning, we extend to you a special welcome and invite you to fill out one of the visitor cards found in the back of your hymnal and put it in the offering plate or give it to an usher. We'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the programs and activities going on here at the church. If you have children with you, they are invited to attend our religious education program during the service. When the children leave for classes later in the service, we do have professionally staffed nursery for infants and young children. Adults are encouraged to attend the adult religious education programming at 11:50. If you would like to learn more about this church and about Unitarian Universalism, there is an information rack in our fellowship hall where there are pamphlets, newsletters, and other visitor information that you are certainly welcome to take home with you. Of course, we encourage you to speak with members to learn more and encourage current members to seek out visitors and share with them this beloved community. We welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. And now I invite you to turn to your neighbors and greet them, especially the ones you don't know yet. We have some announcements this morning. From D. Evans, the 1150 RE group is canceled and encouraged to meet with Pastor Sunshine's 1150 RE. I have a general announcement. Thank you all for the love at the Day of the Dead, the food, the entertainment, the infrastructure, donations, and attendance. Everything was very much appreciated. And a special shout out to the youth group who showed great leadership and teamwork. An announcement from Sayer Johnson. We had some leftover beer from the celebration and it is available for donation. This has never happened before. I have an announcement from Sarah Lazars. The November 8th Kensington Academy workday has been canceled until further notice. And an announcement regarding early voting. So this is for Madison County. For voting today, the opportunity to do so is available from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. The locations are the Alton Law Enforcement Center, Edwardsville County Administration Building, and the Granite City Township Building. You can register the same day you vote at the Madison County Clerk's Office, 157 North Main Street, Edwardsville. You must bring 2 forms of ID, such as a state ID and a utility bill from the last 30 days, with 1 item showing your current address. Same day registration must be done at the County Clerk's Office. You must be 18 or older, or be 17 and have a birthday before November 4th. Important bills to look out for this Tuesday's election, the bill raising minimum wage from $8.25 to $10, and a bill adding an amendment which protects our right to vote. You can also see more on the website www.madisonvotes.com/early-voting.shtml. And Pastor Sunshine has some announcements.
In addition to the ones that were listed here, there is information for other areas. I have these lying around the Kate Worker Room, which is through these doors. So if you want more information on early voting, you can go and hunt down those there. A reminder that today's 11:50 religious education program is going to be the first part of the documentary Race, the Power of an Illusion. Every time I have shown the Race, the Power of an Illusion series, even the folks who are the most trained in anti-racism work learn something new. One of my favorite ones is, tell me what you think is the most likely. For someone to have sickle cell, do you think they would be from France, Greece, or South Africa? You'd think South Africa, it's Greece. People in South Africa are not likely to get sickle cell at all. That would be an example of something you will learn during today's documentary. I highly encourage you to attend. Secondly, you'll notice that you were handed ribbons. If you suddenly remember that you need another ribbon, we will be handing them out later in the service. Also, if you suddenly remember you brought items for the altar for a loved one, there will be time for that later in the service as well. So just hang on and we will make sure there's space for you. And everyone should know, I already did one for Reverend Mercer. He'll be the first one, so don't need to do one for him. For those who don't know who Reverend Mercer is, I'll explain later. Thank you.
We begin our service this morning with a prelude. These are the words of Mother Teresa Gustilo Gallardo. Let us reach the place of self, the place that is not alien to truth. Let us wash over with peace and serenity, with fierce longing for light and heart, with living strength flowing in our veins, bring ourselves into fearlessness and into trust. As Lyric Johnson lights our chalice, we share in the chalice lighting words. Blessed is the fire that burns deep in the soul. It is the flame of the human spirit touched into being by the mystery of life. It is the fire of reason, the fire of compassion, the fire of community, the fire of justice, the fire of faith. It is the fire of love burning deep in the human heart, the divine glow in every life.
We invite you now to rise as your spirits and bodies allow and join in singing hymn number 1028, Fire of Commitment. I invite you to sing it with gusto, or I promise I will stop this hymn.
Thank you. I'm going to share with you the story of The Empty Place by, this will make it easier, by Roberta Thames. In my family, there's an empty place. There's an empty place in the kitchen, in the backyard, even in the car. Sometimes I feel an empty place inside me, too. And when I feel empty, the emptiness is in the middle of my heart. Some days, I'm just a regular, ordinary third grader. But some days, I feel sad, or I feel lonely, or I feel sorry, or scared, or angry. I feel sad because Jennifer is dead. I feel lonely because I have no sister. I feel sorry because last Thanksgiving, Jennifer gobbled up all my turkey stuffing and I punched her really hard and it made her cry. And I feel angry because nobody has time for me anymore and our house is much too quiet. I feel scared because someday my mother and father might die. My babysitter, Betsy, told me that she used to have two brothers, and now she only has one because one of them died. His name was Todd. He didn't die from a serious sickness like Jennifer did. He died from a car accident. Betsy said that after Todd died, she had empty feelings too. She used to feel empty in her stomach. These days, Betsy isn't empty anymore. Betsy thinks, my friends will start coming to play here again, and when they do, we'll flip baseball cards and play Monster and do homework if Mom says we have to. And maybe then I won't feel so empty. Betsy thinks it's okay for me to go into Jennifer's room. I can use her tape recorder, and I can remember how nice she was. She was fun. I really miss her. I'll look at the school pictures on her wall, and then maybe I won't feel so bad. Betsy said that when she was feeling very lonely right after Todd died, she had a lot to talk about. She talked to her mother, and to her father, and her brother, even her goldfish. Betsy thinks, maybe I'll have a new brother or sister someday. I hope so. But if we don't have a new baby, maybe we'll get a dog. I would like a basset hound. I could walk it and feed it and brush it and train it, and then maybe I wouldn't feel quite so lonely. Betsy was really angry when Todd died because everything changed. Her parents were grouchy. Her grandparents cried. Sometimes her father stayed in his bed for days and days, and sometimes her mother hollered at everyone, seemed like for no reason. But she's not so angry anymore. Her mother and father sometimes are sad, but after the sadness comes a smile. Betsy thinks, my family may go on vacation during the summer, and then maybe my parents will joke around with me a little, like before Jennifer died. They'll read me stories and tell me knock-knock jokes. Oh, jokes like, knock-knock.
Who's there?
Tuba.
Tuba who?
Tuba toothpaste. Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Olive.
Olive who?
I love you. And they'll ask me silly head riddles, too. Riddles like, why did the silly head take a ladder to school? Because he wanted to be in high school. And why did sillyhead policeman arrest the baseball player? Because the baseball player stole some bases. Jeez. So maybe when we tell jokes in my family again, I won't feel so angry. Betsy thinks I should ask my mother and father to buy me a new notebook. And I'll print in it and I'll color in it. And whenever I have a thought about Jennifer, I'll write about it in my Jennifer notebook. And whenever I have a feeling about Jennifer, I'll draw about it in my Jennifer notebook. And then I can keep my Jennifer notebook forever, even when I'm very old, even when I'm 20.
invite the children and youth to go to their classes. You'll notice today's worship service is a little bit different than our standard Sundays. Today we remember those who have died, particularly those who have died in the past year, though certainly anybody who has died in the course of our lives. Today's sermon will be in two parts and will be brief so that we may engage in poetry and story and song and rituals of remembrance. Today's worship service invites us into the deep places of our hearts and spirits. We invite you today to the places of grief, sorrow, and loss. We invite you into memories of love, joy, and care. On this day, we invite you to remember those who have died, those who have left an indelible mark on your being, for good or for ill. Today, we remember them. As we listen to stories of grief and death, we are reminded that we are not alone. Entering into the holiday season when those we have loved may be most invisibly present to us, we take time to be with our hearts and to be with our memories. Grief is a complicated mess. Normal and healthy, yes, but also messy, tricky, and painful. Grief becomes something we learn to live with. It is a feeling that is lifelong. The intensity of grief can lessen over time, but the grief never fully fades because the love is ever present. Working in the hospital, I met with hundreds of families who lost loved ones. In some instances, it was tragic sudden deaths. In others, it was years of terminal illness, most somewhere between those two extremes. Speaking to a chaplain, they would say things they thought ministers wanted to hear. Oh, I know they're in a better place. Oh, they're in heaven now. I should be happy for them. For those who weren't God-believing, they might say, well, at least they aren't in pain anymore. Over and again, statements to pass off their own personal pain as a person left behind. The one statement that I said more than any other during those years is a grief is a sign that they mattered. Grief and the accompanying pain, emptiness, anger, numbness, guilt, and all of the signs related to death are signs that they mattered, that they were in some way loved. Whether that grief is over an abusive parent, a beloved pet, an unborn child, or a heroic mentor, the truth remains, if you feel the grief, then that being mattered to you in some way. The question is not how to let go of the grief. The question is how does the grief you feel speak to their presence in your life? Grief is intense in those first few years, and then moderate in the next few. You may go years without crying for a loved one, and then magically you come across a photo of them or a piece of clothing. And then magically, memories flood through you, and perhaps tears or anger. The grief is always there inside of you. Embrace it and be with it. As a resident chaplain, I completed a rotation on the pediatric cancer unit. I visited a teenage girl during one of the rare times when her family wasn't present. She was dying and she knew it. She said, "I can't talk about it with them. I am sad and hurt, and all they want for me is to be happy and to be okay. How can I be okay with this?" After some time of talking, she concluded with, "I've tried to talk to them about it, but it's too painful for them." She died about 2 weeks later, and I took to heart her experience and that of many other dying people. They wanted the authentic presence of their loved ones, even if it hurt. So I invite you now to be with your own experience of loss in your life. I invite you to remember those who made your presence here today possible. I invite you to consider these words from Linda Hogan's Dwellings, A Spiritual History of the Living World. "Walking, I can almost hear the redwoods beating, and the oceans are above me here, rolling clouds, heavy and dark. It is winter, and there is smoke from the fires. It is a world of elemental attention, of all things working together, listening to what speaks in the blood. Whichever road I follow, I walk in the land of many gods, and they love and eat one another. Suddenly, all my ancestors are behind me. Be still, they say. Watch and listen. You are the result of the love of thousands."
Poem from the Year of Magical Thinking by Joan Didion. You sit down to dinner and life as you know it ends. The question of self-pity. People in grief think a great deal about self-pity. We remind ourselves that our own loss is nothing compared to the loss experienced, or even worse thought, not experienced, by he or she who died. This attempt at corrective thinking serves only to plunge us deeper into the self-regarding deep. Why didn't I see that? Why am I so selfish? The very language you use when we think about self-pity betrays the deep abhorrence in which we hold it. Self-pity is feeling sorry for yourself. Self-pity is thumb-sucking. Self-pity is boo-hoo, poor me. Self-pity is the condition in which those feeling sorry for themselves indulge or even wallow. Self-pity remains both the most common and the most universally reviled of our character defects, its pestilential destructiveness accepted as given. Our worst enemy, Helen Keller called it. "I never saw a wild thing sorry for itself," D.H. Lawrence wrote in a much quoted four-line homily that turns out an examination to be free of any but tendentious meaning. A small bird will drop frozen dead from a bough without ever having felt sorry for itself. This may be what Lawrence or we would prefer to believe about wild things, but consider those dolphins who refuse to eat after the death of a mate. Consider those geese who search for their lost mate until they themselves become disoriented and die. In fact, the grieving have urgent reasons, even an urgent need, to feel sorry for themselves. Husbands walk out, wives walk out, divorces happen, but these husbands and wives leave behind them webs of intact associations, however acrimonious. Only the survivors of a death are truly left alone. The connections that made up their life, both the deep connections and the apparently, until they were broken, insignificant connections have all vanished. We are repeatedly left, in other words, with no further focus than ourselves, a source from which self-pity naturally flows.
The following poem is named Susto, written by Jaime Almendarez. If I knew the curandera practices, I'd take my mom by the hand, lead her to the house she's never been, to my own room. She'd sit on my bed crying soft. I'd begin the healing with a bunch of sacred tree branches. I'd make invisible crosses on every limb of her body. I'd start with her heart, and while the crosses were traveling from heart to head to womb and back again, I'd whisper urgent prayers. Dios mío, quiera mi mamá, que no se vaya. After I'd enveloped her in crosses and prayers, I'd drape a dark towel over her soft hair. And as if playing peekaboo with a baby, I'd put my head under the towel close to hers. As we shared the sweet smell, healing branches, through cupped hands I'd whisper, Adriana, no te vayas, aquí estoy, no te vayas. And after that, she wouldn't go. Instead of the airport, we'd go to the park, and she, smiling, would stay. But I don't know the healing practices of my ancestors. All I know is that Mama is leaving again. I make an invisible cross anyway, in my father's arms. He restrains legs that would run, that are running, arms that won't abide, flail until exhausted. They stretch like the golden image next to Mama's heart. But the sound of the engine is too loud for her to hear my prayers. She goes, doesn't look back, and my prayers are the same. I invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any gratitude or celebrations you bring with you to church this morning. There will be time to share concerns and sorrows in a few moments.
Hello. Most of you know me. I'm Spiral. Been a member here for a couple years, so it's probably announced in the last couple weeks, but I haven't been here, haven't made it back. There was the work weekend that happened a couple weeks ago that was a social justice project of the church, and chances are you got an update announcement of all the work we did that weekend, which was considerable, but I wanted to personally, again, thank everyone that contributed in a number of ways with funds and materials and work and good wishes, and it's definitely coming along. It's, I think, going to be pretty cool to have everything insulated and drywalled before winter, and you know, have a toilet that works, which is pretty awesome. I thought I should have, you know, started a log book next to the toilet, you know, like a guest book, so everyone could sign. I'm so proud of it. But I didn't do that, and you know, there's already been several. But anyway, just thank everyone again, and the work is ongoing. We have materials, not all the drywall is quite up yet. Things always take a little longer than you think because it's an old house and everything's not uniform, so still we'll be doing drywall insulation and other work in the next couple weeks at the house, so thank you.
I invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any sorrows or concerns you bring with you to church this morning.
Ron Glossop, I'm sorry to report that Jim Elliott is in very bad situation. They're now talking about hospice care for him. We don't know yet when and where that would be, but it does seem like the end will not be far off. So in terms of going to see him, he's at Christian Northeast Hospital in room 902. The main reason to go, though, is not so much that he will be aware that you're there, but that his wife, Phyllis, who has been very, very dedicated to being with him all the time, will know that somebody has come to see him. So if you would like, please do that. Christian Northeast Hospital, room 902.
Apologize for my voice. I'm getting over laryngitis. My concern is the reason the Kensington neighborhood workday has been canceled. There's concern from our community partner about the possible lack of indictment against Darren Wilson, and there's concern for safety of volunteers in the neighborhood. So our community coordinator, Ramona, who came and spoke here in the spring, she advised us that we cancel the workday because she was concerned for our safety coming into the neighborhood. And I'm concerned about the reaction of the community to whatever does or does not come out from the grand jury. I'm concerned for the young people in that neighborhood and in Ferguson in general. To feel unsafe to be able to help people it makes me feel awful, and for us not to be able to continue that relationship, it's been really tough, and I just wanted you guys to know that's why that workday has been canceled, because we don't know what's going to happen. So,
may the gratitude and celebrations among us this day become a blessing to all, and may the concerns and sorrows of each be carried in all of our hearts. A burden shared become a load lightened.
I invite you now to in the spirit of meditation, prayer, or contemplation as is your own personal spiritual practice. I invite you to get comfortable in the pew. If it helps you to focus, to close your eyes. And I invite you to take a deep breath in and out. And one more time in and out. And now one more time so your neighbor can hear you. In and out. We open our hearts, our minds, our bodies, and our spirits this day. We open ourselves to a world broken open with love, a love that is messy and difficult, and not the stuff of stories and fairy tales, a love that is dirty and nitty-gritty, invites us into times of highs and lows, excitements and wonderments, sorrows and loss. On this day, we remember those who have died, those who have gone before us, those who have helped shape our lives and the lives of those around us. I invite you now
to say the names of those who you would like to remember. And as each person shares a name, the congregation will respond with, "We re-remember them." Dota Walker, "We remember them." We remember them. We remember them. We remember them. We remember them. We remember them.
Mark Fritsch.
We remember them. We remember them.
Ron Zygmunt.
We remember them. We remember them.
Frank and Anita Dolo.
We remember them. We remember them. We remember them. We remember them.
Bill Fisher.
We remember them. We remember them.
Julia Thompson.
We remember them. 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 Fred Shaw. We remember them. For all those named and unnamed, those who are lost without people to remember, for those who will live in our memories long past our lives, we say, we remember them. May it be so. I invite you to take a deep breath in and out. One more time so your neighbor can hear you, in and out, and again, in and out. As we carry these that we love, that we remember in our hearts, we carry their love out into the world, out with our voices, our hands, our minds, our spirits. So as we remember them, may we live on in their memory. I invite you now to join in singing hymn Number 121, Spirit of Life. It is in your gray hymnal.
Seeing from another perspective, witnessing life in all of its fullness, we share from a place of hope and dedication and put our love into tangible form. This morning's offering will be gratefully received. May it be joyfully given.
I invite you to join me now in reciting the offertory blessing words, which are up on the wall. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves, and these are offerings. Ode with a Lament by Pablo Neruda. O girl among the roses, O pressure of doves, O jail of fish and rose bushes, your soul is a bottle full of thirsting salt, and a bell of grapes is your skin. What a pity that I have nothing to give you except the nails of my fingers or eyelashes or pianos melted by love, or dreams which pour my heart in torrents, dreams covered with dust which gallop like black riders, dreams full of velocities and misfortunes. I can love you only with kisses and poppies, with garlands wet with rain, my eyes full of ember-red horses and yellow dogs. I can love you only with waves on the shoulder amid random blows of sulfur and waters lost in thought, swimming against the cemeteries which run in certain rivers, with wet grass growing over the sad plaster tombs, swimming across the sunken hearts and the small pale pages of unburied children. There is a great deal of death. There are funeral events in my helpless passions and desolate kisses. There is the water which falls in my head while my hair grows. A water like time, a black unchained water with a nocturnal voice, with a cry of a bird in the rain, with an unending shadow. A shadow of a wet wing which protects my bones. While I dress myself, while endlessly I stare at myself in the mirrors and window panes, I hear someone following me, calling me, sobbing, with a sad voice rotted by time. You are standing over the earth, full of teeth and lightning. You propagate kisses and you kill the ants. You weep tears of health, of the onion, of the bee, of the burning alphabet. You are like a sword, blue and green, and you undulate to touch like a river. Come to my soul dressed in white, with a branch of bleeding roses and goblets of ashes. Come with an apple and a horse. For there is a dark room with a broken candelabra, a few twisted chairs waiting for winter, and a dead dove with a number.
May 1915 by Charlotte Mew. Let us remember, spring will come again to the scorched, blackened woods where the wounded trees wait with their old, wise patience for the heavenly rain. Sure of the sky, sure of the sea to send its healing breeze, sure of the sun. And even as to these, surely the spring, when God shall please, will come again, like a divine surprise to those who sit today with their great dead, hands in their hands, eyes in their eyes, at one with love, at one with grief, blind to the scattered things and changing skies.
The one thing that is true about grief, as with any emotion, is that when given avenues of expression, the feeling is given meaning, and the intensity can lessen. It doesn't happen all at once. If you're an artist and paint 50 paintings in 2 days about your grief, it will not suddenly dissipate to nothing. That said, routine reflection and expression can help. It can provide avenues for wholeness, giving the grief a home rather than let it being the house that we live in. We can teach this to our children. In the book, How to Bury a Goldfish, very practical, has a wonderful ritual for burying a goldfish, and I'll give you a hint, it is not flushing it down the toilet. The key lesson being that not talking about death and loss does not help. But if you give a child a ritual, a way of making meaning and sense of their experience, they develop skills for coping. And so as it is with children, so as it is with adults. For example, one area we tend to fail masterfully in the United States in addressing is that of unborn children. Whether the loss is from an abortion, a miscarriage, stillbirth, or the illness of an infant, society tends to treat such infants as non-persons, as if somehow their existence no longer matters. It is not even close to the reality. The infant was real and living and a part of a woman's body and a family's life, which means that the grief is often deeply hidden and excruciatingly painful. There are better ways to respond to such loss. Catherine Hammond shares an example from Tokyo, Japan, at the Zojogi Temple. There contains a garden in memory of unborn children, whether aborted, miscarried, or stillborn. The memorial is both unique and touching. Grieving parents are given a small statuette that they dress and decorate themselves. There are more than 20,000 of these statues lined up in the garden there. In addition to the statues, families can celebrate a memorial ceremony called Mizuko Kuyo. This is designed to ensure safe and rapid passage to the ancestors. Wooden plaques lining the walls contain messages from parents to the unborn. One of the most poignant reads, "You are our baby. I will never forget you. From the bottom of my heart, I ask forgiveness forever and ever." Such rituals take that which is inside of us and gives it a home outside of us, in the world of the living, in the real world. Today, we engage in two such rituals. One was during our prayer, speaking those who have passed and remembering them together as a community. Whether we know the people or not, the act of supporting one another and listening to each other allows us to put that grief into a context, give it a home outside ourselves. Today, we take some time to remember those who have gone before. They mattered in our lives. They helped us make us who we are today. Whether we feel that they were a blessing or a curse or a mixture of both in our lives, we remember them and hold them in our hearts and in the stories of our world. I invite you into one final ritual. This is when you need your ribbons and a pen. And on each ribbon, I invite you to write down the name of someone who has died. It could be a pet, a family member, a friend. It could be someone like Mr. Brown or Mr. Crawford. Anyone that you think should be remembered. In a few moments, we will join together in singing a chant. You'll be invited to come forward. And if you have an item that you have not already placed on our altar, you can place it. And you also will tie your ribbon onto this wreath. This wreath, after today, will find a home prominent, probably somewhere in the Kate Worker Room, where everyone can see. And next year, we will add more ribbons to this wreath. So I invite you now to write down the names of those that you wish to be remembered. If you do not have enough ribbons, you suddenly remembered people you had forgotten. I do believe, Mary, where are the ribbons? They're back there? Okay, so yeah, you just go back there and grab one for Mary if you need them, okay? And With that, I will start us singing as I tie Reverend Mercer. Oh, I should say who Reverend Mercer is. He was a minister here in the 1930s. He sadly committed suicide just outside these doors. Some believe he haunts this building. Some say that's bogus. Whatever may be, he is an important part of the history of this community, and I thought it appropriate that he would be the first to be tied to our wreath. And so with that, our chant goes like this. River is flowing, flowing and growing. River is flowing down to the sea. Mother, carry me, your child. I will always be. Mother, carry me down to the sea. And you can come forward whenever you're ready. The river is flowing, flowing and growing. The river is flowing down to the sea. Mother, carry me, your child, I will always be. Mother, carry me down to the sea. The river is flowing, flowing and growing. The river is flowing down to the sea. Child, I will always be. Mother, carry me down to the sea. Keep singing. Just hum it. That verse again. Our beloved dead. As we go into this season of joy, of lifting up and giving and sharing and caring, may we know that those who have gone before are with us in our memories, in our hearts, our spirits. May we know we are never alone, for the love of thousands of ancestors have helped made us possible. And so as Jamie extinguishes our chalice, we know that these lives are not extinguished completely, for their fire lives on in us. May it be so.